Okay, let me give you your chance to give me some feedback here. How many people, by a show of hands, had a hard time understanding anything that girl was saying? Why? She talked too fast. She was like going 90 miles an hour, and she was yelling, and she was screaming, and she was upset. So let me just recap the three very good pieces of advice that she gave. Don't waste time. Keep your station clean, and make sure that you keep your sleeves clean because you don't want to be a mess. That was her advice. But sometimes in the delivery of a message, people lose it because of the way that we deliver the message. You see, it's important that not only that we have good advice, that people can understand what I'm saying. Now, I'd also like to stand and correct her, as well as myself. As I was informed last week, I've been pronouncing this gentleman's name wrong, even though I knew his name. I've been calling him Luigi. His name is Linguini. Luigi is a character from the Mario Brothers video game. His name is Linguini, and her name is Claudette. And Claudette, she did mess up on something. Did you notice how she boiled down being a chef? She memorized all of the recipes that this master chef had done. And she could recite them to you one after the other. And her job was not to do anything unexpected. Her job was just to follow a recipe. I hate to tell you this. It doesn't make her a chef. That makes her a cook. Because cooks follow recipes. Chefs create dishes. And so in her quest to become a great chef, she actually, because of her lack of creativity and her lack of willingness to ever deviate from the message, from these recipes, she'd actually turned her career into nothing more than an uncreative cook. And sometimes I'm concerned that's what we do in the church. In an effort to make it look just like the Bible, in the effort to make it just look like the first century church, that somehow we think we're supposed to be following a recipe that it tells us the exact amount of this to do. You know, do a little worship, do a little teaching, do a little this, do a little that. Throw it all in together, you put a label on it, and that's a church. Well, we're finding out that Paul's ingredients for a church, they're not what we usually associate. As a matter of fact, Paul's ingredients for a church sounds more like the ingredients for a business, does it not? I mean, where did we start our conversation? He said, hey, guys, have some good leadership. We compared it to the flour, the base of the recipe, the stuff that we put in there that solids it up, that holds all the other ingredients, because the flour absorbs everything that you dump into it, and that's what becomes it. Leave the flour out, the other ingredients, a great big fat runny mess. And then we went on and we poured in the milk, and the milk we equated to the good teaching of the church, the sound doctrine, which turned out to be nothing more than just the basic teaching of who Jesus was, because that's what Paul told Titus to teach. And he said, put this in and stir it into the mix, because then we come to the idea that you can't tell the difference of when the leadership stops and the teaching starts, because it begins to mix together, and it turns that floury substance, that loose thing, it turns into kind of a paste. Of course, then last week we mixed in the eggs, and we started to talk about not formal teaching, but more of the informal teaching. I guess if I was looking for a modern day word to put with it, we could call it mentorship. That idea of one life taking one life and you sharing your life down the path until you get everybody together, not by teaching them in a class and having a bunch of formal little lessons, but actually pulling lives together. And then mixing that together and making in the relationship. And again, I want to make sure you understand, these are must-haves. These are things, if we don't have them, it doesn't matter how great the worship is. It doesn't matter how good the curriculum that we pick to teach is. It doesn't matter how cool the activities are we do in the parking lot. It doesn't matter what else we do. If we don't have these ingredients and all the other stuff that we're dumping into the recipe, it doesn't work. Of course, that leaves us with the question. We've got the flour, and we've got the milk, and we've got the eggs. And so we know what the next ingredient is, obviously, because it's been sitting here on the table since the beginning. Today, we're going to talk about the oil. By the way, when we were singing, Give Me Oil in My Lamp, I felt like I should like pull out the marshmallows and make the campfire and get around and just kind of toast them, because that's an old camp song. I mean, if you didn't know that song, that just tells me you never went to church camp, because that's just one you sang every night when you were sitting there with the 10, don't let my marshmallow burn. So that's the way it worked. I mean, it was a really cool song back then, but we're gonna talk about the oil. And well, the oil is important because the oil does some things to the recipe when you put it in there. The main thing is the oil helps it to fluff up. I don't know if you've ever looked at a box of pancake mix before and they give you the recipe for pancakes on the side of it. And when you get to oil, it says optional. Here's what I found out. If you make the oil optional and you leave it out, then your pancakes don't rise. They're just kind of like flat little floppy disks. The key to a nice firm pancake is the oil. Of course, there are different oils out there, right? I mean, there's olive oil and canola oil and vegetable oil, and then there's peanut oil, and there's all these different oils, and you need to understand all of them will get the job done to an extent, but the thicker the oil, the better the rise. If I use a thin oil like olive oil in pancake mix, then pretty much I should just use water because it doesn't do it. The other thing that it does, I don't know if you've ever noticed when you make pancakes and you pour it out, it starts to form a circle, and then at a certain point it just stops. You know what makes it do that? That's the oil. The oil is the thing that as it expands out, the oil heats up first. And as the oil heats up, it takes the mix and it stops it into a nice round disc, and then allows it, so it allows it to expand out. If you didn't put the oil into it, then you got to think small. You can't make great big pancakes if you don't put oil in it. You have to think small because it's the oil that allows the recipe to expand out without starting to crumble and fall apart. Sounds pretty important. I don't know why they call it optional. I've tried making pancakes without oil. Not a good idea. I would highly suggest you ignore the box, put the oil in, and like Paul is going to tell us here, it's essential. The question is what's the oil in the church? So this is where we got to talk about worship, right? It's got to be worship. Got to be worship. It's not worship. Well, it's got to be another thing about discipleship. Yep, it's not discipleship. See, the key word there is that the oil helps things expand, and the thing that helps the church to expand is a good testimony. Now, that's an important word that we talk about in testimony. So if you have your copy of the Bible, you can make your way to Titus chapter 2. If you don't have your copy, I'm going to give you the same invitation I've been giving you now for 4 weeks. You can take the one out of the pew rack in front of you. You can turn to page 1182, and you'll be exactly where I'm going to be today, because we're going to talk about what is the testimony of the church that Paul was talking about. Here's the thing. It ain't what we think. Because usually when I think of the word testimony, I think that I'm supposed to be the person with the sandwich board sign that says Jesus saves, and if you don't listen to me, you're going to go to hell on the back of it. And I go out here and I stand on the corner and I get a bullhorn and I start yelling at people, and that's a testimony, right? No. That's maybe a testimony, but it tells something about it. It's kind of like the cigarette sign. It definitely delivers a message, just not the message that Paul wants us to get into. So what do I mean by testimony? Well, this isn't a hard word to understand, because last week we talked about the eggs. And the eggs are about the relationship in the church. Okay, that's on the inside. This is more about the people on the outside of the body. So we talked about inside the body, our message wants to be one that can pull us together and can unite it all together. Now we got to talk about the message that we're going to put out there to take out to the world so that our pancake or our recipe or whatever we're making can start to expand out without falling apart. I mean, who wants a sloppy pancake? It doesn't work, does it? It's not very good. And so this all starts with the idea of being a witness. Now, I have served on jury duty before and sat in the jury box and made that kind of a move before, and I hope to never have to do that again. That's nerve-wracking, having somebody's life in your hands and you're trying to make a decision. But a witness is a entirely different idea. We understand a witness from a court of law. A witness is just somebody that knows something about an event. It's that simple. I mean, it's just somebody that knows something about an event. So you know, if you see a car accident and you happen to be sitting in the car behind it and you just happen to see what was going on, then you become a witness because you observed it. Now, witnesses come in different flavors. Did you know this? They did. There are different kinds of witnesses out there. Therefore, there are different kinds of testimony. Now, if you've watched Law and Order, then maybe you've heard all this before. You've gotten your education on television. But in case you don't, just understand there are expert witnesses. These are the people that went to school and they know the forensics or they know this or that. Somebody taught them something about it. They're going to provide some kind of information that maybe talks about a psychological disorder. They're an expert witness. You're relying on their schooling and their knowledge and their ability to know something about the subject. Maybe they've never met the people in the case whatsoever, or maybe they know nothing about the exact events, but they know the theory behind it. These are the expert witnesses. Then there are the character witnesses. These are the people that come in and they don't maybe know the event, but they know the people involved in the event. They know what kind of life they live. They know what kind of people they are. They know maybe they're a neighbor or a family member or a longtime friend, or if you're looking for a character witness to tear them down, maybe they're a disgruntled coworker. I don't know. They know something about the people involved, and so they're going to come not necessarily give an eyewitness account, a testimony about what happened. They're going to talk about the actual people. So then you have the ones that are really the case breakers, if you watch the television show. They're always looking for these guys, right? They're looking for the eyewitness testimony. Why is this so invaluable? Why is this so valuable? Because they were there. They saw what happened. They saw whether the light was red or not. They saw who pulled the trigger. They saw exactly what happened. And so you can bring them up and they can give a testimony about what they saw, and then the people can say, well, that's what they saw and they were there, so that kind of makes it an easier case when you have an eyewitness kind of testimony that's out there. See, a witness, you just ask to tell what you know. Now, that's important for us as we begin to think about this word testimony, because I'm not asking you to become an expert witness. I'm not. I mean, if you want to go to school and you want to take classes and you want to get a degree and you want to know how to go out translating Greek to Hebrew and Hebrew to English and you know what all the words, if you want to do that, that's fine. But understand, you don't have to be an expert witness to go out there and tell what you know. You could be a character witness, but that means that you don't actually maybe know what happened. You just kind of know about what happened. Hopefully that's not you. If you're just a character witness, then I'm going to encourage you that maybe you need to become an eyewitness, which means actually get to know the events that happen, actually experience the events, because that's what it means to be a follower of Christ. What we're looking for is the eyewitness testimony. Things that have happened in your life, things that have been out there in your life that you can put in contact with your relationship with God, that you can then go out there and share with other people. See, we're not talking about a sandwich board that says Jesus saves on front of it. We're talking about when we say the word testimony, I just want you to tell people what God means to you. And so people that tell me I can't go out and be a witness, then that just means one of two things. It means that either you don't know how to talk or you don't know anything. That really is what it means. If you can't be a witness, either you don't know how to talk or you just have nothing to tell. We sung that story, I love to tell the old story. If you know the story, then you have an obligation to be a witness. So that testimony is important, because in Acts chapter 1:8, this is what it says. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses. Now, who's talking here? This is Jesus. So Jesus is at the beginning, and we're getting ready to start the church, the recipe. And where does Jesus start? He doesn't start with, and you will be my great teachers, to teach a wonderful, articulately planned, well laid out sermon. No. You will be my worship team that will get up and sing notes and play music. No. What did Jesus come looking for? Well, you'll be my nursery setter. No. You'll be my witness. That's where the church started. You'll be my witness. And then I want you to notice it says in Jerusalem. Oh, wait a minute. That means not, it doesn't say you wait for them to come to you. In Jerusalem, in Judea, in Samaria, to the ends of the earth. You understand it, right? This was after we had the leadership and they understood who Christ was and they understood that they're working together in the relationship. You understand the next logical place was now Jesus is like, now it's time to do what the church is supposed to do, and that is, guess what? Be a witness. Tell people what you know. And so this morning, as we turn to the book of Titus, I hope you got there by now. As we turn to the book of Titus, Paul is going to talk about what makes a good witness. Now, again, if you watch Law and Order, you get this, right? We're almost back to lesson number one when we talk about what makes a good leader, because it's the same thing. If you're going to be a credible witness, and you're going to be somebody that can go out and tell what you know, and you want to have people believe what you tell them, then it really all does come down to your reputation, right? I mean, and a reputation is just what somebody thinks about you, somebody's opinion of you. If you're going to be a good witness for Christ, if you're going to be a good witness, if you're going to be a good testimony, then it really does come down to, when I go out there and I share that part of my life with people, is do they believe me or not? That's important. And I think sometimes that's the reason people don't want to be a good testimony. They don't want to be a good witness because, you know what? They're afraid nobody's going to believe them because they're worried about, then they're going to look at the rest of my life. When they look at the rest of my life, they're going to start questioning whether I know what I'm talking about or not. And that's kind of where Paul heads when he's giving these instructions to Titus and he's giving out the recipe for the church. Paul gets very personal at this point because he's got his leadership. He's got his teaching. He's got his relationships going. Paul understands this is all about the inside of the building. Now we've got to talk about the outside of the building. How is that we go about conveying this message? And he starts about it in a very weird way because it's not how I was taught that you need a good testimony. I was taught by you learn a bunch of memory verses and you go up and then you hand out little tracts and you talk to people and then you witness to people and you explain to people. And Paul doesn't mention any of that. You know what he says? It's all about creating a good reputation for the church. Now, you notice we do some things in this body that maybe sometimes people count as strange, but we go out and we do the blessings box that's sitting up here, and we've been in the parade, and we've done car washes, we do puppets in the park, we do worship in the park. And you understand that's all about building a reputation for the church. When people think of Parkview Christian Church, the idea is we want them to think they're interested in our lives, they're interested in our community. But you also understand that the reputation of the church is better defined by the reputation of its members. Not by a church vision statement, not by some letters on a piece of page, not by what we place on the sign out there. It's about the day-to-day interaction of you and the community that you live in. And that's exactly what Paul does. He wastes no time whatsoever. When he pulls Titus aside, he writes him this way. He says, listen, you want to fix the church, you want to follow the good reputation, then the first thing you got to do is teach them to be a witness in the workplace. And this is what he says. Teach slaves, now, time out, slaves. We're not instituting slavery here. We'll get to that in a minute, but we're talking about an employee-employer relationship. Teach slaves to be subject to their masters and everything. Try to please them, not to talk back to them and not to steal from them, but to show that they can be fully trusted so that in every way they will make teaching about God our Savior attractive. Okay, there's a lot there. Because again, he starts out with this idea of slave. But really, again, we're talking about, he's touching on employee-employer relationship. So if the word of slave offends you, understand, don't we talk about this in the way that we talk about jobs these days? We talk about our managers, and sometimes what do we call them? Slave masters. They just want me to work and work and work and work and work and work, and they don't really care. Understand, Paul is talking about those that have a secular job, and you get up in the morning, and you get yourself ready, and you drive to a job, or maybe your job drives to you. I don't know which way it works for you, but you go somewhere, and you're doing tasks that they pay you for. Keep in mind, slaves in the New Testament, in the Old Testament, they get paid. Even slaves in any era got paid. It was usually called room and board and what have you. It's kind of like children. My kids always, when I give them a chore, do I get paid? I'm like, yeah, but I have to deduct the rent and the food and the clothes. And when I get it all deducted, anything left, you can have. Which usually is zero. Yeah, you would have to pay me a little bit. But you understand, the idea here is that we're talking about anybody that has a job or has had a job or will have a job. This lesson's for you. So now I got everybody here. I got your attention. Because you know what? The first thing he says is, employees, try to please your employer. Now I know that's hard because there are just some people that you just can't please them. I mean, you really can't. I mean, you could do it perfect and they still would complain about it. They would find something that's wrong with it. But when he says, employees, try to please your employer, you know what he's really saying? Do your job. if they hired you to flip burgers, then go flip burgers. If they hired you to change light bulbs, then show up on time and switch light bulbs. If they hired you to cut grass, cut grass. Whatever you were hired to do, then go and do that and do it to the best of your ability and do it in such a way that when they come back, they say, okay, thank you, you did your job. That's it. That's the first piece of advice that Paul gives to the church about going out and being a good testimony. It isn't about memorizing a bunch of verses. It's like, go to work and do your job. Okay? And they pay you to do it too. Isn't that kind of cool? They're going to pay you to be a good testimony. They're going to pay you to do this stuff. And all he wants you to do is just go and please your employer. They hired you. You made the agreement. If you don't like what's going on, then you have the option. Since we're not actually slaves, you can quit and go find another job. But you understand that when you sign up to say, I'm going to be the employee, then you are taking your church reputation and your God reputation to work with you. And you know what? You should be the best employee that they got. You should be there on time. You should not try to slack off. When they give you break time, take your break time. If they give it to you, then you take it. If they give you PTO, don't feel like you have to not take your vacation so you can be the stellar. No. Understand, he's just saying, do your job. Man, that sounds so simple, doesn't it? Anybody could do that. And then he goes back and he tells them, don't talk back to them. Now, my kids are going to probably say, yeah, Dad doesn't have this one down very pat. You have to understand, the job that I do outside the church, they pay me to talk back to them. They pay me for my opinion. And they want my opinion because my opinion sometimes saves them money and sometimes doesn't. But, you know, but they want my opinion. So this is not a fact that you're supposed to go to work and never say anything to your boss. Trust me, bosses appreciate if there's somebody out there wasting their product, they want to know somebody's wasting their product because that costs them money. So this is not that you're never supposed to say anything to your boss. If your boss asks you to do something illegal or unethical, then it's not that you can't tell them no. You're supposed to close your eyes and do it. Paul's not asking you to be a blind sheep. But what he's saying is that you, this idea when you talk back to your employer, when you have to give it, there should be some respect. There should be some respect. I mean, when you go and you're putting a problem out to your manager, then you should approach them like they are a person in authority. They are the person that you agree, you do understand, you agree to make them your boss. They are paying you to be their boss. And so when you come back and you talk to them, you should never do so in a disrespectful way. I mean, so this is important. And Paul is telling the church, he's telling Titus, go and talk to these people and make sure they understand when they go out into the world and they take their job, then you understand not only do your job, but when you do so, do your job in such a way that you are respectful to those that are hiring you. This just sounds like common sense, right? Unfortunately, common sense isn't always all that common. And then he goes on and says, don't be a thief. Oh, well, duh. I mean, that goes all the way back to Exodus chapter 20. Thou shalt not steal. Everybody knows that, really. Don't be a thief. If it don't belong to you, don't take it. You know, that includes time, too, don't you? They pay you to be there for 8 hours. Don't be there for 7 hours and 45 minutes. Okay? If they have a task, then you do the task as long as it takes. You know, I don't work on a clock. We work off of projects. We get a budget, and they count on me to take the project and manage it to the budget and to report my numbers and to report the time. And they would count on me to do this accurately and do it with integrity so that I'm not stealing from them. They count on me because I don't punch a clock. People count on me to be where I'm supposed to be, when I'm supposed to be there, not to be a thief. And Paul has to actually tell the church, don't be a thief. Now, understand, we're about 2,000 years from when this letter was written. And so if Paul had to tell them 2,000 years ago not to be a thief, then you understand humanity has not changed that much. And we're always looking for the loophole, are we not? I mean, we are in this business of going out and working because we want to make as much money as possible for as little effort as possible. Isn't that the goal of having a job? You want to spend as little time as possible at work so you can go out and enjoy the fruits of your labor, but you also want to make as much money as possible. And all Paul is saying, hey, look, understand that's the arrangement, but don't cut corners. Don't be a thief. Don't take things that don't belong to you from your employer, and that includes the time that they pay for. Be a good employee. And he says, be trustworthy and honest. That means that you should be the person that when they ask you a question, you answer the question. And you answer it honestly, and you have a reputation for being an honest person that, when you know what, if they want an honest opinion, you should be the first person they come and ask. Now, notice I didn't say they would always like the opinion you give them. But they value honest answers. And as Christians, as people that go out there and we work in the world, you think about this. If you work just an 8-hour day, and most people are working more than that these days, and you just do it for 5 days a week, which most people are doing more than that these days, that means you're spending 40 hours a week out in the world. It is the most time that you will spend anywhere outside of this church in the world, in direct contact with people that are in ready-made relationships for you. And so if you don't have these, then when that moment comes and that person's life is falling apart at work and they're looking for that person that they can go and talk to or that answer that can maybe fix their problem, because they're not coming to you, because guess what? Your reputation is important as an employee. You get it, right? Paul makes sure you want to understand it. Why does Paul say that you should do this? It isn't so you can have a good 401k plan. It isn't so you can get a raise. It isn't so you can get advancement. It isn't so you can be the manager. Paul spells it out very clearly. You do all this for one reason and one reason only, so that in every way we'll make the teaching about God and our Savior attractive. Oh, wow. You know what? You're a person that has some integrity, and I'm having a big problem. Can I sit down and talk to you? Absolutely. Come on in. I'll tell you what makes it work for me, and you know what? It makes it more attractive for you, does it not? I mean, that's what he's saying. It says, for the grace of God has appeared that offers salvation to all people. All people includes the co-workers, including the ones you don't like. All people includes the manager, including the one that gets on your nerves. If I went to your workplace and I walked around and I just took a little notepad like Linguini was doing with his notes for his cooking, and I just walked around and said, I'm going to pick on you, Rich, just because you're sitting there. I said, how's Rich? Tell me about Rich. What's my notebook going to look like? If I went to your, if you're here and you're not, you're a student, if I went to school and I sat down and I talked to your teachers or your classmates and I said, I can pick on you, you're related to me. How's Benji? Tell me about Benji. Are they going to tell you you're lazy in class? Your life depends on it. No, they won't. They'll give Benji a good request because you know what? He's got to come home and answer to dad and mom. They'll give him a good thing, but I just want to tell you that I should be able to walk into your place of business or your school and ask about your job, and they should say, you know what? I don't know what we would do without them. They show up on time. They do their work. They're always courteous. They're there. They do what they're supposed to do, and you know what? Everybody looks to them, and we respect them. They're better than sliced bread. I mean, they're fantastic. Students should be, man, his grades are up, his assignments are down. Yeah, maybe he struggles with some of the arithmetic, but you know what? He gives every ounce of effort he's got. That should be the testimony that we give. Because Paul says to Titus, when you get that, now we've got this ingredient solved. Now we got it out there. Now, I know what you're thinking. How bad is it? Paul goes on to tell Titus, he says, don't let anyone despise you. That's your testimony at work. If I walk from work to work, now I didn't say you won't have some disagreements, because if you go talk at Lexus, there will people that will tell you, Barry, can be very complicated to deal with sometimes. I mean, I understand that, but you understand that nobody should be able to despise you. If people don't want to work with you, then they're never going to be willing to listen to you. Oh, wow. That's important to know. Now, there are some that are saying that, well, I'm retired, what about me? But Paul is saying you should see your work ethic as a good testimony to God, because that is what is out there for you. And working in the workplace, well, the retired people, this doesn't apply to me. I'm all done. I don't go to work in the morning. I sit at home and drink my coffee. Well, you understand that would be wrong. You remember last week we talked about the relationships in the church? You do understand if you are retired, then the people that are still out in the workforce working are going where you've been so you have the ability to take the people that are still out in the workplace and become their mentor about what it means to be a good employee, so that you're making the same impact on the world that they're making. See, that's why the eggs had to come first. That's why we couldn't talk about the oil before we talked about the eggs, because once your working days are done and you are retired, then now you have the ability to feed back into that next generation so that they can go out and be a testimony. Wow, it's amazing how these ingredients just work together to form what we're cooking here. Isn't that cool? One works off of the other. One doesn't work unless it goes together. And then Paul moves on and he says, you know what, not only to be a good witness in your workplace, you're supposed to be a good witness in your community. Now, and he makes this, and he says it in such a way that, well, it can be kind of intimidating. This is what it says. Do not let anyone despise you. Remind the people, so this is something that you should already know, so this is not rocket science, this is like refresher course. Remind the people to be subject to the rulers and authorities, to be obedient, to be ready to do whatever is good, to not to slander no one, to be peaceable, considerate, and always to be gentle toward everyone. So, Paul says, you know what? If you're going to have this testimony aspect and your kingdom is going to expand and you're going to have something that flakes up, then he says, you know what? How people perceive you outside the workplace and the community. So this would be your neighbors, you know, the person in the stoplight in front of you. This is how they perceive you. And Paul says, hey, look, this is not something that's new. It's a reminder. You should be law-abiding. I make the joke that when you see that speed limit sign on the side of the road and it says 55 or 65, you realize they're God-ordained. You know how I know they're God-ordained? Because God put the government in place and the government passed the laws. So since they're up there, then Paul says, you know what? We should observe the speed limit signs. Okay? I'm working on that one. I believe in grace. You know that five-mile little thing? I believe in grace, but you understand law-abiding. That means when taxes are due, you pay your taxes. Okay? That means that when something's it doesn't say, now notice he didn't say I should like the laws. Okay? I don't have to like them. But he does say if you're going to be a good testimony, you should be law-abiding. You should be willing to follow the rules that are out there, because that lets people know that you have an authority over you. And that authority isn't the government, it's the God. You should not be a gossip or a slanderer. Oh, well, okay, well, that's obvious, right? I mean, would you ever really want to go talk to somebody about a problem that you've got if you knew the next night it was going to be the lead story on the evening news? No, you don't want to tell anybody your business if that's the way it's going to be. No, you want to go to somebody that is going to listen to your information and maybe give you some advice and tell you, I'll pray about it, or if you need to come. And you want to make sure that what you're telling them isn't going to end up all over the place, because you know it's very personal and private. And if you have the reputation of being a, then you know what? Nobody's coming to you. You're never going to have a chance to tell them what you know, because they don't want to hear it. And by the way, he throws in the word of not being a slanderer. Not somebody that takes somebody and, you know, they come and tell you about it. And while you never actually go and share the story, even though, but you know some details about their life, so then you always have a negative opinion. No. Understand, a good testimony means that you're a place that people can come looking for help, and they know that what they're going to get is not talked about. He goes on to say, peaceable. Now, here's one we could all work on. Not always creating a stir. You want to look it up in Webster's. You're not one of these people that you're just looking for something to fight about. As a church, we love a good fight, don't you? You give us an issue, and man, we can fight about it and fight about it and fight about it. And we can go out there and we can have rallies and we can do all this kind of, and every single time we do that, you know what the Lord's looking at? Yep, there they are again, them crazy Christians out there fighting another battle. This isn't supposed to be peaceable. It says that when people look at us, they should be able to see the peace in our life. Not a commotion. Not a stir. Remember what I told you last week about teenagers? They're looking for somebody that they can be like, not somebody that can be like them. And you know, that's the truth. The entire world is looking for that. And they're looking at the church, and you know what? If it's nothing but chaos and commotion in the church, why do I want to go there? You know why? I got enough chaos and commotion in my life. I don't need somebody else's. That's the idea that Paul was talking about here. A good witness in our community starts with being at peace, and then he handed this point. He said, be considerate. Okay, that means that when the light turns red, you got to wait more than 2 seconds to beat the horn, folks. Really. I mean, if the person in the line, and they've got 13 versus 12 items, it's okay, really. Okay, it means that when the salesperson makes a mistake or they mess your order up at the restaurant, that's not your cue to give the waitress what for. Because let me tell you something, she didn't mess it up. Some of the cook probably messed it up or something. She just happened to be the person you reached out to. Think about this. Next time you get in that, I'm going to give somebody a piece of your mind, my mind, let me give you a piece of advice. Save it. You might need your mind for later. And think about that person right after you lay them out, you turn back around and say, now let me talk to you about Jesus. How would that work? Really? Seriously? It says that we're supposed to be considerate. I'm supposed to think before I speak. Okay, what I want in my opinion is not as invaluable as your plan of salvation. And you know what? If what I have to say in my mind is going to damage my ability to witness to you later, then you know what? Keep it to yourself. I tell you what, don't keep it to yourself. Later on when you're at home in a dark closet, tell it to God. Give God a piece of your mind. Tell him all about it. You may not like the example that he gives you when you're all done, but you know what? At least you can get it out of your system. Because Paul says if we're going to be the church with a good testimony, we have to be considerate. And it says, always gentle toward everyone. Gentle. It's like taking an unboiled egg and walking around with it and trying not to let it break. That's hard work. It is. Take it everywhere in your life and not let you. I'm supposed to be gentle to people. It doesn't mean I can't give them truth, but I'm supposed to give them truth in such a way. Not like Claudette. Not like she was doing with Luigi. Not saying, you know what, keep your station clean or I will kill you. That's what she said. You think he remembered? I bet he did. You think he valued it? Probably not so much. There's this old story. It's an old routine called Steak on a Trash Can Top. It's a wonderful little routine if you've ever seen it. But what it is they actually went to a restaurant. It was a well-known steakhouse, and they were trying to prove a point about presentation. And they decided to replace the plates with trash can tops. And they brought out these expensive steaks with all the trimmings and the little new potatoes and all. And they brought it out and they served it to you on a trash can top. And you know what they noticed? People didn't want to eat it. I don't know why, man. That's an expensive steak. Why? Because the presentation is important. Because the fact that you don't want your meal served on a trash can top. God does not want you out there serving up his plan of salvation on a dirty plate that nobody wants to eat off of. You see how important this idea of testimony is? The reason we don't want to go out and share God's word is because that means I have to clean up my life before I go do it. And that's not something we're usually interested in. See, Paul makes it so very clear. Let me go back and read this to you again. So that in every way they will make the teaching about God, our Savior, attractive, for the grace of God has appeared that offers salvation to all people. That's the purpose of a testimony. And let me tell you something. Without that ingredient, the church doesn't grow, does it? The church doesn't work. So I guess here is what I want to ask you. Is your outside life helping the kingdom expand? Now, notice I phrased that question very pointedly. I did not ask you, do you know how to lead somebody to Christ? I don't care whether you can quote the verses or not. Is your outside life, when you step outside that door, in the way that you drive, the way you live, the way you work, the way you do, is it helping expand the kingdom of Christ? If not, this is the ingredient that's missing. We don't have the testimony to go out there and share. And you know what that's going to do to the church? Just like the pancake, as it begins to spread, it'll fall apart. Every single time. You can try to flip it all you want, but you're going to get this mess all over your grill, and it's a pain to clean up because it'll scorch. This testimony is so important. There's the thought. So now we have the ingredients, but there's another sermon left in the series, and now you're going to have to ask yourself, what are we going to do with the ingredient? Because we're missing something. We're missing something awful important from this table. That's next week. This week, let me ask you something. Do you have a testimony? Have you ever met Christ? If you hadn't, we're going to do a time of decision, and let me encourage you. this is your day. I can tell you all about, I can give you a testimony like you wouldn't believe, not Bible verses. I can tell you, I can give you an eyewitness account of what God has done in my life. Come on forward during our time of invitation. I'll be happy to share it with you. If you're here today and you've done that, let me ask you something. How is your testimony? If I had to judge Jesus by your life outside this church, what's the image look like? Good or bad? Facebook page. Like? Don't like. What's it going to look like outside of the building? Would you please stand? I'm going to ask the worship team.